to the path of self-knowledge. His glory is great, and he shall be for all ages like unto a star. If he chooses instead the way of the tantras, combining samsara and nirvana, comprehending the world and continuing to live in it, this one is mighty among dreamers. He may be mighty for good or for ill as we look upon him, though these terms too are meaningless, outside of the namings of samsara. To dwell within samsara, however, is to be subject to the works of those who are mighty among dreamers. If they be mighty for good, it is a golden time. If they be mighty for ill, it is a time of darkness. The dream may turn to nightmare. It is written that to live is to suffer. This is so, say the sages, for man must work off his burden of karma if he is to achieve enlightenment. For this reason, say the sages, what does it profit a man to struggle within a dream against that which is his lot, which is the path he must follow to attain liberation? In the light of eternal values, say the sages, the suffering is as nothing. In the terms of samsara, say the sages, it leads to that which is good. What justification, then, has a man to struggle against those who be mighty for ill? He paused for a moment, raised his head higher. This night, the Lord of Illusion passed among you. Mara, mighty among dreamers, mighty for ill. He did come upon another, who may work with the stuff of dreams in a different way. He did meet with Dharma, who may expel a dreamer from his dream. They did struggle, and the Lord Mara is no more. Why did they struggle? Death God against illusionist? You say their ways are incomprehensible, being the ways of gods. This is not the answer. The answer, the justification, is the same for men as it is for gods. Good or ill, say the sages, mean nothing, for they are of samsara. Agree with the sages who have taught our people for as far as the memory of man may reach. Agree, but consider also a thing of which the sages do not speak. This thing is beauty, which is a word, but look behind the word and consider the way of the nameless. And what is the way of the nameless? It is the way of dream. And why does the nameless dream? This thing is not known to any dweller within samsara. So ask rather, what does the nameless dream? The nameless, of which we are all a part, does dream form. And what is the highest attribute any form may possess? It is beauty. The nameless, then, is an artist. The problem, therefore, is not one of good or evil, but one of aesthetics. To struggle against those who are mighty among dreamers and are mighty for ill or ugliness is not to struggle for that which the sages have taught us to be meaningless in terms of samsara or nirvana, but rather it is to struggle for the symmetrical dreaming of a dream in terms of the rhythm and the point, the balance, and the antithesis, which will make it a thing of beauty. Of this the sages say nothing. This truth is so simple that they have obviously overlooked it. For this reason, I am bound by the aesthetics of the situation to call it to your attention. To struggle against the dreamers who dream ugliness, be they men or gods, cannot but be the will of the nameless. This struggle will also bear suffering, and so one's karmic burden will be lightened thereby, just as it would by enduring the ugliness. But this suffering is productive of a higher end in the light of the eternal values of which the sages so often speak. Therefore I say unto you, the aesthetics of what you have witnessed this evening were of a high order. You may ask me then, how am I to know that which is beautiful and that which is ugly, and be moved to act thereby? This question, I say, you must answer for yourself. To do this, first forget what I have spoken, for I have said nothing. Dwell now upon the nameless. He raised his right hand and bowed his head. Yama stood. Ratri stood. Tak appeared upon a table. The four of them left together, knowing the machineries of karma to have been defeated for a time. They walked through the jagged brilliance of the morning beneath the bridge of the gods. Tall fronds, still wet with the night's rain, glistened at the sides of the trail. The tops of trees and the peaks of the distant mountains rippled beyond the rising vapors. The day was cloudless. The faint breezes of morning still bore a trace of the night's cold. The clicking and buzzing and chirping of the jungle accompanied the monks as they walked. The monastery from which they had departed was only partly visible above the upper reaches of the treetops. High in the air above it, a twisting line of smoke endorsed the heavens. Ratri's servitors bore her litter in the midst of the moving party of monks, servants, and her small guard of warriors. Sam and Yama walked near the head of the band. Silent overhead, Tak followed, passing among leaves and branches unseen. "The pyre still blazes," said Yama. "Yes." "They burned the wanderer who suffered a heart attack as he took his rest among them." "This is true." "For a spur-of-the-moment thing, you came up with a fairly engaging sermon."
"Thanks."
"Do you really believe what you preached?" Sam laughed. "I'm very gullible when it comes to my own words. I believe everything I say, though I know I'm a liar." Yama snorted. The rod of Trimurti